You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Coming up on episode 249 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Audi Q5 Sportback, the Hyundai Tucson N-Line and Ioniq 5, a road trip in the Kia EV6, Tesla FSD can't recognize airplanes, NHTSA finally has a new administrator, all that and more coming up next. Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. This is episode 249 of Wheel Bearings. I am Sam Abual Samid from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from the Fast Women podcast. You almost forgot where you're from, Sam.
I almost did.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from Autoblog. New one this week.
Joining my old stomping grounds.
Yeah, they're good folk. They used to syndicate a lot of my stuff when I was in Engadget over on the auto blog. And so I was like, oh, I should probably write something for them. So I pitched them and said, yeah, go write that thing. And I said, yay.
It's all one big happy family over there at the former Weblogs Inc.
Weblogs Inc. Don't get me started on Weblogs Inc. I have a whole insane past with those people.
I'll bet, yeah. All right. So let's start with you this week, Robbie. What have you been driving?
Oh, man.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm always ready. I was born ready. I was driving.
Ready for what? We don't know, but ready for something.
Ready.
Yeah, I was born ready for other things, not this. But here we go. So I was driving the 2022 Audi Q5 Sportback. This is the Q5, but it has the scoopy, swoopy back.
So instead of a square back, like a traditional SUV, it's sliced off.
Yeah. And here's the weird thing. I've driven the Q5, I don't know, last two, three generations. For some reason, just because it's got that little swoop, it feels really small when you like kind of get into it. Like, oh, this car is so much smaller than it. No, it's not.
Same size.
I mean, there's less cargo room because you have the little swoop, because that's just what happens when you, but it just, for some reason, your brain tricks you into thinking you're driving a smaller vehicle, which is
optical delusion.
It's an optical delusion. Exactly. yeah, so it has it's actually I really liked it. Here's the thing though. So I liked it. It was fun to drive. You know, it has 261 horsepower, 273 pound-feet of torque. You can do 0-60 in 5.7 seconds. You know, the regular type things. It's not quite as sporty as it I feel like it should be a little bit more sporty if you're going to put the word sport back in it. It's like almost there. And it's an Audi, so it's like, okay, well, Audis are already sporty. And then you throw the word sport back, you should like, it's, I don't know. I feel like it needs a little extra something.
More sporty.
Just a scooch more extra something. I think for people who buy it because they like the way it looks and they're already happy with like the Q5, they're going to be like, oh, this is fine. But I think when you add the word sport, a little something.
That's fair.
Yeah. It's the Quattro. It's all, it has all the regular Audi interior stuff. Audi's sort of the tech division of the Volkswagen group. They work on a lot of the sort of the tech stuff. MMI, still a really nice infotainment system. I still do not like where they put the stock for the driver's assistance. I've been complaining to Audi this for
down
years.
Low on the left.
It's down low on the left. Yeah. And I don't care how many Audis I've driven. I'm still like, wait, how does this work again? And I will have an Audi for a week and I'll finally almost kind of remember how it works. Whereas everyone else, it's, you know, it's on the, it's the buttons on the, on the steering wheel.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, these are easy to understand. It's, I don't know why they, I don't know. I mean, you could move the media buttons, I guess, if you wanted out of there, but off the steering wheel. But it's, you know, everything else on the steering wheel, it's not, you know, you don't accidentally hit things. Like, it's all laid out very nice, except for that one thing. The one thing that just bugs the hell out of me.
Just one thing that you'll hate about the Audi Q5 Sportback.
Just one here. 50 things you'll love and one thing,
one
you'll,
thing
hate.
You'll hate.
Yeah, one thing you'll hate about the Audi Q5 Sportback is that... it has let me look at my numbers. Oh, it has a combined MPG of about 25 miles per gallon. Again, it's larger than I think. I got about 24. I was doing you know, a lot of Robbie driving, which is
not fuel efficient. No.
Yeah,
it's, you know, well, it doesn't necessarily correspond to the way the EPA test drive cycles are done.
Exactly. There you go. Exactly. Wow, that was well phrased. Your political career is in the wings there, Sam. You can do it any moment now.
It's like when you do the, when I drive EVs, I do a range test, which is just like, okay, this is just like boring driving. It's the most boring part of any of the cars I get is range testing. And then I do the driving test, which is like me driving like me. And those are two different things. You know what I mean? Because most people don't drive like I do on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. They just sort of like, oh, I got to get to work. And then we put the car in. Yeah. So same thing, you know, 24, that's pretty good. It's, you know, it's an expensive luxury car. It's very comfortable. I feel like Audi's for the past, I don't know, like 10 years now, just sort of like for a while, they had a pretty bad reputation. I used to refer to their transmissions as made out of glass.
Ooh, that's not good.
Because everyone I knew who had an Audi had some sort of transmission issue at some point or another. I you know, that's, I think that's, those sort of scary exploding transmission days are over. So that's good for that. Good for Audi for sort of bringing it, or, you know, coming back from the verge of just being ugh. It's starting, according to the website, it starts at $50,100. According to my Moroni, it starts at $48,400.
Ooh, discrepancies.
You know, it's quattro, so, you know, it's going to take off. You're not going to have a lot of wheel slip. It's a, the vehicle I drove, though, it had the Prestige package, which was $8,700.
Oh, my gosh. What do you get for $8,700 that make you prestigious?
You get Prestige.
You get Prestige.
Prestige worldwide.
That's it.
You get the Audi phone box, which I guess is just the charging thing. You get the Bang & Olufsen surround sound, 3D audio, auto dimming, Sirius XM for 3 months, LED lights, which you can't really use yet in the United States, parking assist, virtual cockpit, you know, all the little fancy schmancy active lane assist. Everything is packaged in one giant.
So it's a lot of stuff. It's not like a small package. It's a lot for that price.
Heated rear seats, heated and cooled front cup holder. By the way, I love
that.
I think every car should have, if you can heat my seats and cool my seats, I would really love if you could heat and cool my cup holder.
I thought it was like, that was like when the first time I experienced heated seats, I thought, I'm like, this is stupid. Who needs this? And then once I use them, I'm like, oh my God, who can live without this?
You right? Live in New Hampshire. Like, I'm shocked that you would ever think that.
But I never had a car that had them. So I'm like, this is just a silly frou-frou thing for the fancy people. And then when I finally had a vehicle that had it, like, this is the most amazing invention ever. And then the cup holders that are heated and cooled were the same way. I thought, this is just so ridiculous and over the top. Who needs this? And then it kept my coffee warm. And I was like, oh, me. I need this in every car I have for the rest of my life.
I did find an error on the Moroni that, well, it might not be an error. It has ventilated front eats. So the eats
maybe
are ventilated.
Maybe you missed a spot where you can put like your ice cream and it keeps it cold. It ventilates your eats.
It ventilates my eats. overall, you know, it's a good car. It's, you know, if you're looking for a luxury SUV that's not, you know, it's not too over the, you know, it's not too foo-foo, it's not a Mercedes, it's not a BMW, the Audi's, and you want a little bit, you know, you want some of that sportiness that Audi is known for, then yeah, the Sport, and you don't mind losing some cargo room for a kind of a cooler looking version. I think when they first showed it off, I was like, oh, all right. But now when you have it for like a week, you're like, oh, this is kind of look. It just looks like a big hatchback, what it does. It looks like a big, nice hatchback.
Okay. Big, nice hatchback.
Big, nice hatchback. And
just don't ever let people think of it as a hatchback.
No, you can't actually call it that.
Don't say the word hatchback. I don't.
Sportback sounds cool. Hatchback, no sir.
Sportsback sounds cool. Yeah, I think sportback is. It's a hot. See, you can't even say hot. It's a sizzling sportback.
Sizzling sportback. Snazzy sportback. I don't know.
The destination charge was $1,095. So, well, it's all right. You know.
Oh, that's less than my car that I have this week. Mine's more than that. Mine's pricier, to make you guess.
Yeah, you know, they're bringing everything that Audi has. It's a super comfortable ride. It's really nice to sort of drive around town, throw it in dynamic, put it in sport. You know, you can keep up with most of the other vehicles on the road. One other thing I will say is that I was driving a series of performance EVs. Like, yes. I just felt like there's like one after the other performance EVs for a while. And then I got this, which I don't think is fair because there's such a, like you get in, you push down the accelerator and all of a sudden it's not that immediate. Mm-mm.
It's not an EV.
Immediate. And you're like, what's going on? And for a second I was like, oh, what's wrong with this car? And then you remember, oh, that's gas cars. That's a gas powered vehicle. And it's not a manual, so I can't like control, you know, I can use the paddle shifters, but it's not the same, especially.
Which, you know, that is, and it's funny because I think all of us know that there's a real difference in how an EV accelerates versus how a gas car accelerates. Even if it's a super powerful gas powered car, there is a very distinct difference in how they respond. But you still talk to like regular folks who are like, oh, is it okay driving an EV? You're like, yes, it is. Well, don't get it.
This week I was at the MAMA, that's the Midwest Automotive Media Association Spring Rally, which is held at Road America in Wisconsin. And you know, we have that 70 cars there for us to jump in and out of. And one of the things we did on the second day was an autocross that they actually do on the go-kart course that they have at Road America. And one of the cars they had available for the autocross was the BMW M240i that you had, I think, last week, Robbie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, which was lovely, except if you forget to put it into sport mode and pop the transmission shifter over into sport mode, the transmission just feels so lazy. I had been driving the i4 M50 earlier.
Oh,
and the acceleration of that thing compared to the M240i was like night and day. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it's unreal.
I look forward to an M2 I two something M2
whatever. I M2 or something.
Yeah, a two series
whatever alphabet they create.
I'm looking forward to a two series
EV
because I think that's going to be real fun. I think that's going to be a really fun car. Yeah, so whenever you're thinking, you're like, oh man, I really want to go fast, but I don't want one of those EVs.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, you want the EV.
You want the EV. You do. You do. You don't think you do, but you do.
Yeah, that i4 M50 is pretty choice.
Yeah, well, we drove that one. We had it on the first day. It was only available for street driving, not on the track. And it was raining the first day when I took it out. And on the last section of the road loop, you turn off onto the main road that goes back up and back into Road America. And so it's uphill in the rain, you know, from a standing start. And I had it going to, let's just say it was not quite three digit speeds, you know, going up this hill very quickly.
It's
there you go.
Anyway, Q5. Sportback. There you go.
There you go. Boom. There it is.
Done and done.
All right. Cole, what about you?
Okay. Continuing the theme for the last 3 weeks of my life, it is still Hyundai Palooza. A different Hyundai this week. No, I did not get a job at Hyundai. I'm just getting all of their cars. So I have
That's
the
not 20- a bad thing, to be
I
honest.
Know. No, it is not. I have the 2022 Hyundai Tucson N-Line all-wheel drive. So the Tucson, which is new, which is, I actually love the exterior of the Tucson. The doors have these very angular design to the sheet metal. Like if you look at the picture, you see these angles. It looks really cool. I like how they design the exterior of this. But the N line, this is not about performance with this one. It's about looking sporty. So there's, it doesn't have more horsepower, more this, more that, fancy handling, fancy anything. It just looks cooler. That's basically the big difference between the rest of the Tucson lineup. It looks cool, which there's nothing wrong with a car that if you're not someone who cares about sporty, you just want to look cool, it looks cool. Because you get a lot of extra N-line stuff. You get special 19-inch wheels, the front and rear fascia. I like this part. They specifically say the front grille. As opposed to that back grill that many cars have. The front grill is a special N-line grill.
Our Honda Civic does have sort of imitation grills on the back.
But do they call it a grill? No one calls it that.
I don't think so.
Yeah, okay. But so the front grill, and then there's badging. It comes with dual exhaust, and it has a special N-line spoiler on the outside. So you get some stuff on the outside that makes it look different. On the inside, you get special seats. They are N-line black sport seats with leather and cloth. They actually look really cool. And the cloth sort of has a texture to it. But I discovered, because it's short season here in New Hampshire, and it makes your legs look like you have like this weird waffle print on your legs when you get out of the car. It's like, oh, that's not attractive. So it does leave a little print on your legs in shorts weather. There's neat red accents. In fact, on the dashboard, there's this sort of like on the passenger side, there's this section that has sort of like a black sort of fabric-y thing on it. It has these little like red lines, like swoosh, swoosh, swoosh. It looks really cool. It looks neat. Like everybody who sat down in the car noticed it. You get alloy pedals and scuff plates, and you get a special N-line leather wrap steering wheel and shift knob. So those are sort of like the N-line things. That's what makes this its own special trim. And then it also gets... I'm going to say it's like the middle of the Tucson lineup, kind of, sort of. But you get extra stuff like that's not specific to the N line. You can get it on other Tucsons, but this one has the Bose audio, the 10.25-inch digital instrument cluster, wireless charging, and ambient lighting. Hey, has anybody ever, either of you in your whole life, had a wireless charger in a car that really, really works well? I feel like they never work for me. I take a corner and suddenly my phone is not charging.
Cadillac, GM in general, they typically have theirs set up so it's in a slot, and there's the little rubber sort of pillows in there. So when you slide it in, and it holds your phone in place.
I always think it's charging, and I'm like, how come I only have 1% battery charge, and I've been in the car for 2 hours? Like I go over a bump. And it's not even my phone case, because, yes, I took my phone case off and I still try it and I still have issues. But this one does have wireless charging. So that's sort of like the appearance stuff that makes it an N-line, and some of the just cool extra, like we put this on our N-line trim. But for performance, it's got what the rest of the gas vehicles in the Tucson lineup have. It has a 2.5-liter four-cylinder engine, 8-speed automatic, 187 horsepower, 178 pound-feet of torque. It can actually tow up to 2,000 pounds if you properly equip it. And for fuel economy, it gets 26 combined. I did a decent bit of driving in this, and it was really like highway and country, and I came up with about 25. So pretty close to what they said. And it had, you know, me, my hubby, and my two kiddos in there, and a bunch of stuffs. This was... $34,000. The only extra thing, $34,140 to be precise. The only extra on it for that price was $195 for carpeted floor mats. And Price is Right time. What was the destination?
I'm gonna say
$1,195.
Did you both say $1,195?
I said $995.
You just go low on purpose. That's not even fair.
Oh, that's what I think it is. Is that what it is?
No, it's not. It's actually it's $1,245.
Ooh,
oh,
see,
yes.
I lost.
So Sam wins. But you always go low. Like, I'm just gonna go low to this. $1,245. So which is more than
I said $995 first, though. I didn't undercut him. He overcut me.
He overcut you.
Should have said $996. Well,
but I was also listening earlier.
Yes, he was paying attention.
When you said whatever the your car had, 1095?
1095.
Mm-hmm. And you said yours was higher.
Nicole said yours was higher. Yes.
See, because Sam was paying attention.
I was just monologuing at that point. I'm not really listening. I'm just like, ooh, it's my turn to talk. Woo-hoo.
Blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. So 1245. So 1245 for destination. So, but 34140, this is a decent car. I like driving this. I mean, like I said, you're not getting extra performance for going with the N line, but it does have a little extra style. I do like how all the Tucson's have this very angular look, especially to the doors. It doesn't look like every other little bulbous, sleek little crossover / SUV thing that's out there. It's fun to drive. It's nice. The acceleration is fine. It's a comfortable interior. It does a good job of being just a nice, affordable SUV. There's all-wheel drive in there if you live in the Northeast, which is great for me in the winter. And actually, what's really funny is right now they're repaving our street in front of our house. So, like, I don't know why repaving it involves taking it down to the earth's core first. So there's just like dirt, and like you go up, and it's like off-roading. I'm like, well, let's take you out there and see how you handle it. I'm like up and down and back and forth. My daughter takes the charger that we have out, and she's like, I'm afraid to take it out. I'm like, that might be a good call. Don't take it out today. Like, the road is terrible. So it was kind of fun taking on all this dirt to get out of the neighborhood, and it's fine. So it's a good choice. And I feel like for the price, for $34,000, you're getting a car that looks good, that drives nicely. Hyundais have a great reputation for quality. It gets decent fuel economy. I don't have complaints about this. I like this.
And it's just like a Santa Cruz with an enclosed rear end.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
It's like having a permanent cap on the back of a Santa Cruz.
You just stuck it on the back.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I like this. And you can get it as a hybrid and a plug-in hybrid, which I drove at the plug-in hybrid at Hyundai Palooza last week in Tennessee. You have very many choices. You can get the gas, you can get the hybrid, you can get the plug-in hybrid. They're all good choices. They're all well-priced within their segments.
Can you get the hybrids with the N-Line package?
I don't think you can get a hybrid with the N-Line. I think the N-Line is exclusively... I'm almost positive. Wait, I'm going to double-check. I'm almost positive the N-Line is exclusively the gas engine. Oh, I don't have the right form of. I think that's just gas. I think there's a very small trim lineup. Yeah, the plug-in hybrid is SEL and Limited. The hybrid is SEL, Convenience, Limited, and Blue. So you don't have an N-Line. Yeah, the N-Line is just the gas engine.
Okay.
So, womp womp. Yeah, N-Line is just good. There's four gas trims, four gas, three hybrid, and two plug-in hybrid. So that's what your options are.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
I drove the Tucson plug-in about a month or so ago, mm-hmm. and was really impressed with it. And it's quite a bit larger than the last generation Tucson was. It's kind of gone up a size class compared to the old one.
It's very roomy. It feels very open. Like, even when you push the front seats back, you know, you still have room for, you know, that 6 foot person in front, 6 foot person in back. You can do it. You don't feel squished. We loaded that thing full of all sorts of stuff for this holiday weekend that we're in. We had like groceries and all sorts of balloons and everything shoved in there for all the parties we were having. And it swallows an incredible amount of cargo too. So that's always good. It's a versatile little choice, and it's a good price, and it's fun to drive.
My only real complaint about the Tucson, mm-hmm. Is the infotainment system, like the center stack, mm-hmm. the controls below the screen, the display, are all touch controls.
Mm.
There's no physical controls there. It's all capacitive touch controls, like for temperature and climate and volume and everything else, all touch. So you have to look at it to hit those controls. I always prefer to have at least some of those be physical controls.
No, I'm with you on that. I love touch screens, but I like for the controls like that for HVAC stuff, for volume. It's nice to just be able to grab something and do that. So yeah, that is definitely a downside.
Yeah.
Just give us some touch controls, people.
A few little knobs and buttons. They've been around forever with good reason.
For things you have to use a lot, like make that a touch control.
Right,
because if I have to turn my head to do stuff.
You mean a physical control?
A physical control, yeah.
Thing I can
a knob,
touch.
A button.
I guess everything's a touch control.
Yeah.
Unless I'm using my voice or my mind.
Just use the force. Well, yeah, so I agree.
All right. Well, I also had a Hyundai, a different Hyundai than I was planning.
See, it's all Hyundai all the time for all of us.
I was actually originally scheduled to have the Kona N-Line, so the smaller crossover with the N-Line package. But the day before, they had to swap that out because Hyundai needed that vehicle for something. So they sent me the Hyundai Ioniq 5 instead, the Ioniq 5 limited all-wheel drive model, which is...
So upgrade.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. It's, you know, the top of the line version of the Ioniq 5. It was interesting because I also had, like, for the following week, this past week, I had scheduled the Kia EV6 to use for a drive to Wisconsin for the Mama Rally. So I had the opportunity to go back to back for several days between the Ioniq 5 and the EV6, which are mechanically, electrically, you know, basically the same vehicle, but very different styling, different feel to them. The Ioniq 5 has a almost 4-inch longer wheelbase than the Kia, and it also, the roofline sits about 3 inches taller. And of course, you know, the look is a very different look. You know, the Ioniq has this kind of faceted look, you know, in some ways, you know, some similarities to the Tucson, but going even a couple of steps beyond that, you know, with this kind of, you know, it looks like a design that would fit right in Minecraft.
That's
and,
a good description.
And I like it. I think it's a cool design. It's good to see, you know, companies do something different. And especially as they're going to EVs, you know, not just take their existing vehicles and close off the oversized grill, and, you know, call it a day. You know, they actually, you know, gave it some real thought and designed this thing, you know, knowing what do we need from an EV. So with the Ioniq 5 being a little bit longer, a little bit taller, you know, a little less shapely than the Kia in terms of its aerodynamics, it has slightly less range than the corresponding Kia with the same battery and motors in it. And I think, where is it here? The Ioniq 5 all-wheel drive, the rear-wheel drive version of the Ioniq, the single-motor rear drive version with the extended range battery has a range of 303 miles. The Ioniq 5 is 256 miles. I didn't do a formal range test with it, but I did go drive it around my typical loop a couple of times, and it averaged about 3.4 miles per kilowatt hour, which is pretty good. It's actually
a freeway.
No, it was a mix of freeway, suburban, urban driving, and that is slightly better than what the official EPA rating is, which actually works out to about 3 miles per kilowatt hour, because 34 kilowatt hours per 100 miles. So it works out to actually just slightly under 3 miles per kilowatt hour. And I got 3.4 with it. So it's quite impressive. It's quite efficient. It does really well. I really like driving it. It's a very roomy car. We drove it to Detroit on Sunday morning for some pastries. My wife really liked it as well. She thought it was very comfortable. It's very quiet. The design is, you know, as I said, both inside and outside is an interesting design. And it's got, it actually has more physical controls than the Tucson does. The highway drive assist feature that they have on here and on the Kia, which is their sort of level two, it's roughly equivalent to Nissan's ProPilot Assist, where it combines the adaptive cruise control and lane centering. Generally works really well. It's a hands-on system though, so it's not like Super Cruise or Blue Cruise where you can take your hands off the wheel. You do have to keep your hands on the wheel, but it works really smoothly. And on the Kia, I actually found that really useful, especially when I was driving back, driving through rush hour traffic around Chicago. But I'll get to that in a minute. I don't really have any notable. Well, actually, I have only one notable complaint about the Hyundai and the Kia.
Wait, is it another 50 things you love and one thing you'll hate about?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
and that is the trip planning capability. And I've done a story that's going to be on Forbes Wheels about an EV road trip review with the Kia. But if you're taking a long trip that is beyond the range of the EV, you want to, you're going to need to do a little bit of planning to figure out, okay, where do I want to make my stops for charging, so that it's convenient, so it's not too far out of the way, but it also doesn't necessarily add a whole lot of time to your trip. You want to minimize that time you have to add to your trip. For most EV drivers, you're going to charge at home. That's great. But if you do have to take a longer trip beyond the range of the vehicle, then you've got to think in advance of how you want to do this. And the system that they have in the Hyundai and the Kia, if you put in a destination that is beyond the current range of the car, it'll say, you don't have enough range to get to this destination. It pops up. Do you want to search for charging stations? Yes. Great. Mm-hmm. Search for charging stations. It could not find any of the charging stations that I knew were within range.
Oh, really?
That were appropriate. I took the Kia to or the Hyundai to drive up to an event at the Magna headquarters in Troy, Michigan. And coming back, I didn't actually need to charge, but I wanted to see how the system worked. And so I put in a destination, that was not my home, that was beyond the currently available range.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an Electrify America station, a 10-minute walk from my house. It would have been perfect spot to stop and charge. And when you go into the thing there, you can filter it by, charging speed and networks and, do you want it nearby or along my route? And I pick along my route. And I knew that this station was like literally 30 seconds off the freeway along my route. And yet it could not find it. It didn't know. It didn't pull it up for some reason.
Was it giving you another station that was somehow, I'm trying to like defend it. Was it giving you a station?
No, it was showing me no stations along my route.
Oh, none. So you're just SOL.
If I did nearby, it would show me all the stuff that was close right around me. And
yeah,
most of which was level two stations, which were not particularly useful for a long trip.
Right.
I've talked to Hyundai and to Kia about this, and they're aware of it, and they're working on improving that. Hopefully that will come as an over-the-air update at some point in the not-too-distant future. But right now, if you're driving one of these and you're planning a road trip, you absolutely want to do your planning in advance and figure out where you want to make your stops before you go.
This is one of the things that Tesla does so well.
Yeah.
Well.
Ford does it well too, in their system.
The Mach-E is really nice.
Yeah.
So is this just a known thing where they're like, so our vehicles aren't really finding the closest chargers or they're omitting chargers?
The navigation system isn't finding the right, actually be most useful for that trip.
That seems like kind of a major thing for, a vehicle that needs those to get any distance.
Ford does a good job, but they all need to get a Tesla model, whatever, into the thing, and someone just say to the team, make this happen.
Make this work like this.
Get the SDKs, get the APIs, get everything you need from EVgo, from Electrify America, from ChargePoint, and you need to figure this out.
Yeah. And, before I left on my trip this week, I also did some, tried to look at other solutions for EV trip planning. And I looked at several different sites. And right now I've got a tab open here with Charge Hub, which is one of the systems out there. And I put in, the trip, from my home to Road America and pick the options. I want only DC fast charging and, find chargers within 10 miles of my route. It's not showing me one of the chargers that I actually stopped at, which was actually more convenient. It's showing me a slower charger that is closer to the limit of the range of the EV6 but it's only a 50 kilowatt charger, which meant I would have been sitting there for 2 hours charging this thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell everyone a better route planner. It's an app. It's a website. It works with CarPlay, a better route planner. An automaker actually gave me, when they had me driving their vehicle a very long distance, or like someone on the team's like, use a better route planner.
That's really? Actually the name of it. A better route.
Better planner. Route planner. You can put in the car. You can put in the state of charge before you leave. You can put in the state of charge you want when you get to where you're going. I'm surprised they had not been purchased. If you want to use it with CarPlay, you have to pay. There's like a subscription fee. But if you just go online, you can just use their website. You can just use their app. A better route planner.
Yeah.
Someone should just buy them. Volkswagen should just give them a big pile of money and steal everything that they've been doing. Yeah.
Well, first let me finish off with the Ioniq 5 first. So the Ioniq 5 equipped as I drove it, it was the limited all-wheel drive. So that's the top of the line version. Came to about $55,000, which is kind of pricey. I mean, it is still eligible for a $7,500 tax credit, but it's on the pricey side. And so, you know, compared to say a Tucson plug-in hybrid, which has got similar interior volume, you know, that's about $15,000 more than the Tucson. And you know, it's kind of might be, I guess I would suggest, you know, that if you're thinking about one of these, maybe consider the extended range rear wheel drive version instead, which you can get for under 50 grand. You know, so it gets you down to, you know, closer to that same price point as the Tucson. You know, if you need the all-wheel drive, you're certainly going to, you know, that's an extra $4,000 and you're going to get some more performance. But it's, you know, it's quite a bit for what you're getting. I mean, it is a nice, really nice vehicle. But, you know, this is the challenge still with pretty much all the EVs in the market. They are still pretty expensive.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
From that, let me transition to talk a little bit more about the EV6, which I drove to Wisconsin. And again, you know, same motor, same dual motor setup, 320 horsepower, 310 horsepower, 274 miles of rated EPA range. And for, you know, when I did set out on my trip, I knew that from my starting point, it would not pull up the station, the EA station I wanted to stop at in near Kalamazoo, Michigan. Instead, as I was driving, you know, as I start driving away from my home, maybe it will find it along my route. Mm-hmm. I was about 30 miles from my house, driving down I-94. And I tried it, you know, I put in the destination and said, okay, you know, find me chargers along my route. Instead of pointing me to the one that was 70 miles in front of me along my route, It tried to direct me to the EA station near my house, which was 30 miles behind me.
Oh my gosh. So if you had no idea where you were, you'd be driving 30 miles backwards for no reason. Backwards.
Exactly. Both Electrify America and ChargePoint actually have quite decent apps that both work with CarPlay and Android Auto. And so I was using the EA app and Android Auto. And I went back to Google Maps and had my destination in there, my original destination in there, and then switched over to the EA app, pulled up the the charging stations near me, and hit the one in Kalamazoo, and says navigate, and it goes right in and adds that as a waypoint in Google Maps. So it works really nicely for that. Unfortunately, what it doesn't do when you're using it in Google Maps, and if you're using the app just on your phone, you can tap on any of the stations and find out, you know, the availability of chargers, the speed, mm-hmm. and everything. In the version that shows up in Android Auto, it doesn't show you that level of detail. So it only shows you availability. It doesn't show you the speed or anything like that. But it will guide you to them. Same thing goes for ChargePoint if you're using ChargePoint. When I got to the station in Kalamazoo, I pulled in there. Amazingly enough, there was actually another EV6 already charging. That's the first time I've ever seen one in the wild, and it wasn't somebody heading to the rally. It was somebody
just a regular person, just like a regular person old
charging
human.
Their EV6.
A human person. Tell me more about these people.
Human person.
And so even though I left home with a full charge, and I didn't technically need to charge 100 miles away, I did that because I would actually be stopping in for another charge in Chicago, because in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin, the closest DC fast chargers are about 35 miles away, and those are Tesla superchargers. The closest CCS fast charger is 50 miles away in Milwaukee. And so what I did was I said, figured, okay, I'll top it off in Kalamazoo, go to Chicago, top off again, and that will give me enough range to get from Chicago to Elkhart Lake and then back to Milwaukee on my trip back. And that worked out really well, and gave me a little bit of buffer since I wasn't particularly in the mood to drive the car all the way until the battery was completely depleted and then have to wait around for a flatbed. I always left myself some buffer and tried to pick the chargers close to my route and with the fastest speed so I'd have the minimal amount of downtime. So it all worked out really well when on my way back when I was in Milwaukee, I was at a 350 kilowatt charge station. It was charging at about 221 kilowatts, nice. Which is close to the peak of what the Hyundais and Kias will do. And I went from 10 to 94% charge in 30 minutes.
Once it gets over 200, you're just like, wow.
Yeah, it was like cranking along.
It's like imagine, and then that last 10-20%, you're like, all right, this is physics. But that when it starts and it's like 200, you're like, ooh,
physics. I like that. Well, this is physics.
Physics.
What was funny, when I got to that charger in Milwaukee, there were already two VW ID4s there being charged up, and they left a few minutes after I arrived, and then a couple of minutes after that, somebody pulled in a Lucid Air, which is the first one I've ever seen in a while. And so I was chatting with the owner for a few minutes. He said, he picked it up from the factory in Arizona 6 weeks ago. He's already put 7,000 miles on it.
Wow.
He loves it.
I bet he does.
It's a good car.
I love that car. It's fantastic. It's pricey as heck, but man, is it a great car.
Yeah. You feel the money you spent. You're like, okay. It's like an S-Class. You get in the S-Class, you're like, man, this thing is so expensive. You drive it. Oh.
Yeah, there's some cars.
Or a 911. It's like.
Yeah.
911 S class, you get in both those cars, you're like, oh, that's why.
There's cars you get in, you're like, this is just too expensive. I don't know why I would buy this. Other cars, this is so expensive. You take a seat. Oh, I get it now. Definitely. Yeah.
Well, he said he previously owned a Tesla Model S.
Ooh.
Said, it never felt like a $100,000 car. And this one definitely does.
No, the Lucid feels entirely different. The Lucid really does feel like a luxury car, not like a luxury EV, not like a future EV. It just feels like a luxury vehicle in every way. It's beautiful.
So overall, the trip, I put on 834 miles, used 245 kilowatt hours of electricity, and got about 3.4 miles per kilowatt hour. And considering that this was almost entirely highway driving with the adaptive cruise set at 75 miles an hour, I'd say that was pretty good.
Yeah, but it 3.4?
Was 3.4, which is
that's really again, good.
It's a little
75 better, miles an hour on the freeway.
It's better than the EPA rating. So I think realistically, you know, if in more typical, you know, mixed driving, even though this thing's rated at 274, I would expect you could easily get over 300. On a charge.
That's really good.
Yeah.
During the drive program, we were driving around Clear Lake, and I was just kind of driving through town when you first driving. I looked down, and at that point, it was getting 5 miles per kilowatt.
Yeah.
Just like no big deal. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm getting. I'm like, just driving around. I'm like, you know, once we got in the back roads and on the freeway, that went down. But just kind of cruising around town, you're like, geez, this is nice.
So for anybody cool. wants to do a road trip with an EV, it's absolutely doable. In most places in the U.S. now, but you do need to do a little planning ahead and figure out where you're going to stop, you know, because a lot of the DC fast chargers, the non-Tesla DC fast chargers that are out there, are only 50 kilowatts. Like around Chicago, along the I-94 and 294, they have these Oasis rest areas, you know, where they've got some restaurants and gas stations and stuff. And most of these now have EV chargers, but they're all 50 kilowatt chargers. And so I wasn't going to, waste my time at those. I went to an EA.
Why bother?
I went to an EA station that was across at a fashion outlet mall parking garage across the freeway from O'Hare Airport. And that worked out great.
Did you buy any fashion?
I did not buy any fashion.
Oh, wow. I'm telling you, a better route planner. Check it out.
I will do that.
You can put in your state of charge. You can put in a state of charge you want when you get where you're going. You set in your car.
I was just playing with it as we're talking. Like, this really is really cool. I like opened it up on my phone. I'm like, I'm looking at this. This is really neat.
It's very much built by engineers. When you look at it, you're like, okay, it's not super, super user friendly. Sometimes you're like, wait, what do I do? I go, how do I find my route again? But like, once you figure it out, you're like, oh man, this is the stuff.
Well, I will definitely try that one for the next trip. All right, let's get into some other topics. Let's start off with Tesla. Tesla. I don't know, a month and a half or so ago, there was an item that popped up on a bunch of websites with a little video clip. Somebody filmed a Tesla being used by the owner in summon mode, which is the thing that, in theory at least, is supposed to allow you to have your car's in the parking lot, you can open up your phone and have your Tesla drive itself to where you are. And some guy was, showing off summon mode, I guess, to his friends or something at a local private airport. And the car ran right into the back of a Cirrus Vision Jet, a $3 million jet. Didn't even seem to flinch, didn't seem to notice that it was there. I had written an email to the hosts of another podcast I listen to called Airplane Geeks about it, because one of the hosts there is an instructor and flight instructor and spends a lot of time flying Cirrus aircraft. And I thought they'd find it amusing. And the following week, somebody else wrote in, a Tesla owner, who took his car to the local airport just to see what would happen. And he actually pulled up behind an airplane. And he had, had it in the FSD mode, and he took a picture of the screen where it shows you what the car thinks it's seeing, what the car's sensors think they're seeing. And around the plane, there were three orange cones, and the plane was there directly in front of the car. And yet the Tesla saw the cones, but did not see the plane there at all, which is clearly, to me, a demonstration of how fundamentally wrong Tesla's approach to self-driving is, because they're relying only on cameras, and using end-to-end AI without any kind of deterministic or rules-based software algorithms. And that means that you've got to train the system to recognize everything, which, you know, there's going to be a lot of stuff that when you're driving around, you don't necessarily need to know exactly what it is, but you do have to recognize that there is something there in front of you that you probably don't want to run into. And this is
do not hit objects, whether you know them or not. Do not hit objects.
Yeah. So
there's a thing there.
Yeah. There's a thing. Go around the thing. What is it? Don't know, but go around it anyway.
Yeah. Even if you don't recognize what it is, that's fine. Just assume that it's something you don't want to hit and either stop or, you know, go around. So I will post the photo that this guy sent in showing the screen in his Tesla, not seeing that there was an airplane even there in front of him, in the show notes.
Because people tow planes and gliders. Like where I'm from, there's a glider port there, and so people are towing their gliders up there. And I guess the Tesla would probably see the license plate and some other stuff, and maybe the tow trailer. But what if it didn't? What if the person just like, oh, I forgot to put the license plate on the back of my trailer? If there's a plane there, it's white because most planes are white, so now it can't see it, and then it's just like conk.
Yeah.
How's that go? Conk. It just runs conk. Into it.
Conk.
All right. Next up, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration finally has a new administrator for the first time in 5 years.
They finally got a boss.
Yeah. During the prior administration in Washington, the previous president, who shall remain unnamed, did not even bother to nominate anybody for the job, you know, because that administration didn't actually believe in rules or regulations. So they didn't even bother to nominate somebody to fill that position. The current president did nominate Stephen Cliff last year early in 2021. And now the Senate has finally confirmed Mr. Cliff as the new administrator of NHTSA. So we'll see if maybe some things start to happen now.
Maybe they'll do their job.
Ooh, that would be nice.
Create some regulations and some rules. Yeah. NTSB is not happy with this.
No. They are not.
I've been to NTSB. I was at an event talking about a crash. And at the end of it, they just spent a good 20, 30 minutes just railing it at NHTSA for not doing their jobs. Like, you have a job and you're not doing it.
Not NHTSA-ing.
Yeah. All right. Next up, Rivian. Rivian's had some challenges actually building their vehicles since they started production last fall.
Yeah.
So I guess apparently their head of production has decided to leave. Not quite sure if it was his decision or RJ Scaringe, the CEO's decision, but where is he? Charlie Mwangi, who was previously their head of manufacturing, has left the building. And Rivian's got a new COO, chief operating officer, coming in starting on Tuesday. And it's a former Magna executive, Frank Klein, will be taking over as chief operating officer.
I mean, that's a good hire.
Yeah.
Magna, they know how to build things.
They build a lot of stuff.
Yep. G-Wagons and Supras built by Magna.
Yep. And they also, they know how to manage supply chains and get suppliers to ship them parts that they need to build that stuff. So hopefully having this guy, this gentleman in as their new COO will help them get their supply issues sorted out.
Hopefully. I'd like to see somebody. Well.
Yeah, it's a good truck, man. That's such a, wow. Them and Lucid, wow. Because I thought they would seem like the two that were going to do well. And I'm like, okay, the cars will come out and they'll be fine. And then I'm like, wow. You're
like, or not.
I know, or not.
Or maybe I judged that wrong.
Whoopsie.
BBS. You guys know who BBS is, right?
They make wheels.
Manufacturer. Yeah. They have a new version of one of their wheels that they have announced. Called the CIR wheel, which is a pretty good looking wheel. Excuse me. The new version of the BBS CIR wheel is now has what they call universal fitment, BBS Unlimited. If either of you ever bought aftermarket wheels for any of your vehicles?
I've never done that.
Yeah, I had some aftermarket wheels on my Del Sol and then on my Civic, as you would expect.
Yeah. So
I'm in no way surprised.
These new BBS wheels, you know, one of the challenges with buying wheels is making sure that you get wheels with the right bolt pattern that matches your car. You know, because different manufacturers have different patterns. You know, you have 4, 5, 6 bolt wheels, different diameters. And so what BBS is doing, I guess some other manufacturers have done this as well, is they're bundling the wheels with hub adapters, so that you have this adapter that goes in between the wheel, the hub on the car, and the hub of the wheel, so that you have one that matches the car and the other one matches the wheel. I've never used anything like that, but there are some aftermarket adapters that you can buy for various wheels, but I think, you know, buying something from a company like BBS, you're probably more likely to have something that's actually going to be reliable.
Yeah, I feel like if you get it directly from them. Also, but the wheel adapter thing, I just feel like the torque every time that wheel turns, there's always going to be a minuscule amount of movement between that adapter and the wheel.
Tiny little bit.
Just a scooch.
Tiny little bit every time.
Teeny tiny little bit. I mean, it sucks when you save up a bunch of money for wheels and then you go to buy them and it turns out they don't make them. They don't have the right wheel pattern for your car. And you're like, oh, that's a 20-something-year-old sadness right there.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Last item for this week before we get into Q&A is the Fisker Pair, which I don't know if they're actually going to call it that in production.
I think they are.
It's sounding like that's the plan, but it's they've released a teaser sketch of it, and it's coming in 2024, and it's going to supposedly have a starting price under $29,900, which would make it, you know, one of the cheapest EVs on the market. One of the interesting things, though, this is actually supposed to be built in Lordstown, Ohio, at the factory that used to build the Chevy Cruze. Mm-hmm. In fact, way back when. It's also the same factory that built the Chevy Vega. You remember the Vega?
Oh, geez. Way back.
Lordstown, I feel like it's a cursed factory.
Yeah. It's a cursed factory. It is cursed.
Well, when GM finally abandoned it, you know, they sold it to Lordstown Motors. And, well, I think the curse continued with them. So hopefully it doesn't continue for Fisker, because a couple of weeks ago, Lordstown finally closed the deal to sell this factory, which they had bought from GM, to Foxconn, who makes the iPhones that you guys are using and all kinds of other stuff. Foxconn has not had a great record with manufacturing in the U.S., though.
Just ask Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, Neelai Patel, the editor-in-chief at The Verge, complains about them all the time because Foxconn was supposed to build a giant TV factory just a few miles from where he grew up in Racine, Wisconsin. And no, needless to say, they're not building TVs or anything else in Wisconsin. But now Foxconn wants to get into the EV manufacturing business with Fisker.
Have you said, I'd like to point out that where I was like, where the heck did they come up with Pear? And it's the Personal Electric Automotive Revolution. That's what Pear stands for.
I guess.
Personal electric.
I don't think the names of your cars should stand for anything. just find a good name.
Especially when it's obviously a retro name like that.
Yeah. Like, oh, it's just like, oh man.
Okay.
You know what I like? Pears.
How we go from ocean to pear? Like, I see ocean to wind, or like ocean to sandstorm. I don't know, but ocean breeze. To pear, ocean to breeze, yeah. But ocean, it like, should have going from
waves.
Ocean wave. To wave, but ocean to, now we're doing fruit. I don't know.
I feel like someone needs to do the Earth, Wind, and Fire one. And like, just pay Earth, Wind, and Fire a bunch of money. And then when they announce the third car, Fire, then they have the band come out.
Well, and the band comes out.
Well, I mean, the band couldn't come out anymore. Yeah.
Do you really want a car called Fire?
Yeah.
Especially an EV.
They
all catch on fire eventually. At the end of the day, fire cleanses us all.
Boy, that's dramatic. Jeez.
Okay. Let's answer some listener questions. First up, from A. Jordison on Twitter. It appears the Lightning is going to be a major breakthrough for regular electric vehicle acceptance. Speaking of which, Ford did their first customer deliveries this past week of the
Did
Lightning.
They really?
Yeah. When will we see this take place with SUVs? I think most of us just want normal-looking vehicles that just happen to be electric. What do you think?
I mean, I have one of those right now.
Yeah.
I feel like we already Kona have electric. SUVs.
That, e-tron, that... the Audi e-tron, the first, the not the A3 e-tron, but the e-tron SUV.
The e-tron.
E-tron, yeah. That's such a weird naming thing. That everything's, but first one's the e-tron, but then everything else is e-tron something else.
Yeah.
What else looks like just a regular
old... Well, but I feel like it kind of is taking place already. I mean, like electric vehicles that kind of just don't look weird and wonkity. The EV6 doesn't look crazy. Yeah. The Hyundai Ioniq 5 doesn't look crazy. Like you could just, those
I think to the average
made.
Buyer, they, those look
Do they?
Crazy.
You think but you they can, look crazy?
Again, but yeah, but the people who, again, the e-tron and the car I own.
Kona. You own a Kona.
The Kona. It just looks like a Kona. It just looks like a Kona, but it doesn't have the grill up front. And it just has nothing and a little hole.
Does it have one in the back?
No.
Yeah, it doesn't have a back grill.
Yeah, there's a rear grill for hot dogs. And
like the Tucson, apparently.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. You know, there are, you know, already several, you know, rather conventional looking electric SUVs. Or crossovers, and there's going to be a bunch more, you know, coming in the next year or two. I was actually just talking to somebody from Genesis the other day. The GV70 EV is coming next year. That's actually going to be built at the Hyundai plant in Alabama. Ford's got electric versions of the Explorer and the Aviator coming in 24. Chevy has shown released sketches of the renders of the Equinox EV, which looks, you know, fairly conventional. The Jeep that we saw renders of a couple months ago, you know, that looks fairly straightforward. Although apparently that one might not actually be coming to North America. That might be for Europe only.
Come on.
Yeah, because apparently it's smaller than we all thought it was. So it's more maybe like even smaller than Renegade.
Wow, that is tiny.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, there's a bunch more, you know, more traditionally styled. Let's put it that way. SUV.
There's some out.
SUVs
there's
coming.
More coming.
Yeah,
you'll if you want something wacky, it's available. Available. I can't say the word available, by the way. If you want something traditional.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, AJ asks, do they sell storage batteries that can be used to power the home, but be charged with power from the electric utility rather than solar cells? Our state has really cheap power at night and would make it convenient to buy and store it for charging during daytime. And actually, Bryn Berenshausen responded to this directly on Twitter format that so I can actually read it. It says whole home batteries like the Tesla Powerwall and Enphase storage are able to do this already. No requirement to pair them with solar. It's just what most people do. The problem with using whole home batteries to charge cars is that a car battery is, say, 55 kilowatt hours or larger, while a single Powerwall is only 12 kilowatts and costs $12,500 plus installation. So unless you're only driving 30 to 40 miles, you'll deplete that battery and spend a lot of money for it. When I started looking into solar batteries, solar plus batteries, my dream was to do this, charge the home battery during the day with solar and then transfer that to my car overnight. In reality, I'd have to spend a small fortune on dual power walls and it wasn't in my budget. So what do you think? I agree with what Bryn is saying there that, you know, it's probably not economically viable to do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. I mean, the power walls are really nice. And, you know, a Sunrun has one, because I'm actually looking, I'm trying to figure out like who I should get for solar on my house. And it's like all the reviews are like paid for by the solar company. So I'm just like, ugh. Plus, it's not something you could just review. I'm going to throw some solar panels on my house. Yeah,
okay. Now, toss those on there for a couple of
weeks. Can you send me a review set of solar panels and a battery for my house so I can
try it
out?
I think that for the wall is mostly for when the power goes out. And then you're like, okay, so now I have something that'll keep my, you know, especially if you live in California because of the fires, or you live in an area where, you know, intermittent access to electricity, they're great. To power your car, that's probably less. Yeah, I think mostly you want the sun to power your car, and then also fill up that battery pack. And then when things are going hinky, or during the day, if you know, the car's off somewhere, you can have that power wall like sort of help you run your air conditioning in the middle of the day.
Little boost.
Between noon and like 9 p.m. when electricity is very expensive. And it's also very warm outside. You can use that to sort of run your air conditioner and that sort of thing. So it's cool for that. My new goal is to get a bi-directional vehicle, and I've been looking at the ID Buzz, so that acts as a power wall. Mm-hmm. So that is connected, because most of the time we're not driving that. We'd be driving the Kona, or we'd be driving the BRZ. And then we take the ID Buzz out with the dogs and you know, to go pick up some mulch and whatnot. But that would be the power wall, as opposed to buying a power wall. But, you know, I'm crazy that way.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. You know, because the vehicle is going to have a lot more battery in it than you're likely to have, you know, for stationary storage in your home. You know, and as more and more vehicles come out with bi-directional capabilities, you know, I think we're going to see that capability expand beyond just, you know, the power backup when your power goes out, you know, but, you know, to maybe be able to use it, you know, to reduce some of the load. So, you know, if your solar, you know, is producing, I don't know, like 24 kilowatts or something, you know, and you need, you know, something more than that, you know, during peak times of the day, you can take some of the juice from the battery to supplement the solar, you know, and then recharge it later. So you know, I think there's going to be a lot of interesting options there. But like you say, the home batteries are more for those emergencies. And it, I think, you know, as we get these bi-directional vehicles, you know, I think even those are going to become less and less useful, the home batteries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause, my wife was talking to someone who got solar and didn't get the battery, and then decided later they wanted the battery. And it turns out it's more of a pain in the ass to get the battery after you get it. So if you get it all done at once and then you get the battery, I'm like, oh man, but the car. And then I'm like, well, I don't really need an F-150. And
yeah, can't really convince myself I need a pickup truck for no reason whatsoever.
Other than, yeah, whereas the van makes a lot more sense for us because the dogs and all the stuff, but we'll see.
All right. Well, speaking of the ID Buzz, we had another question from Friedelin Koch, who I'm assuming lives in Germany or somewhere in Europe.
I would guess.
And he asked what our thoughts were on the pricing of the ID Buzz. Prices here in Germany, oh yeah, okay, there we go, were released a week ago and are very steep, considering it is the same platform as the ID4. And I think the price tag for the Buzz in Germany is somewhere around 50,000 euros. Which is pretty expensive, even when you're factoring in the VATs that they do there. What do you think?
I mean, I've heard 40 to 50 for it.
For the US,
I think if it's 50 there, that's like 44, 45. The euro is not doing very well, by the way, against the dollar. I was just over there. I'm like, oh, look at all the things I can buy. So yeah, if it was like 40, 45, I think would probably that's what we'll, you know.
That feels right. I think you're right, Robbie, yeah. Somewhere in there. And I feel like people would go for it at that price too. So
it'd be nice if they had it on lease too as well. I mean, I'm still a big.
Well, I'm sure there will be lease options.
EV
leases. You can't EV lease the Mini SE, which is kind of a bummer.
Really?
No, there's no lease available for the Mini SE. And they're like, yeah, we don't have to because people just keep buying them. We can't make them fast enough. I'm like, oh, okay. because everyone gets in one. They drive it around. They're like, you know what? Maybe I only need an hour, 100 miles because this is fun.
Okay. Next up, James Gardner. Question about cars for new drivers. Reliable older car without tech, or go new to have all the safety equipment, the safety electronics present. In my case, I have a Mercedes 2015 GLK 350 without so much as a backup camera. Keep it or get something new with its excellent resale value.
What is that, like 7 years old? I was trying to do math.
What is math, really?
Hmm.
I mean, here's at some point, prices for used cars are going to go back down. So if you're thinking money wise, if you have another vehicle that you could that you could drive, maybe sell it and hold on to that cash until, you know.
Exactly, that's the problem right now, because even if you sell it, Mercedes for a really good price, you're going to pay a heck of a lot to get into a new car, because you're not going to get a deal on any new car right now because they just don't have the inventory. So exactly. If you know, I guess you'd have to weigh it. Am I getting so much more for my Mercedes right now that it would make it worthwhile to go and buy a new? Because you could potentially, if this is a car for a new driver, right? Let's assume this is a young new driver that they're looking to replace this for, right? You could get a pretty cheap car. Do you know what I mean? Like, you might be able to get something where the really good resale value on that Mercedes, which is a more expensive car, can get you a very cheap new car and have money left over. No,
you get a Nissan Kicks.
Yeah, like you could get that still have that has
right a nice cheap car, and then have some money left over to use on another car if you want.
Exactly, like you could save that cash if you just want to get a cheap low end new car for a new driver. You can buy a cheap car that has a ton of tech. Safety tech on it is standard features that aren't on that Mercedes. And then you could probably, that might make sense.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, you know, even many of the entry level cars and crossovers today, you know, have at least some degree of driver assist systems. I mean, at the very least, you've got backup cameras standard on everything new.
Right.
You know, and in many cases, you've got things like blind spot monitors, lane keep assist, some cases even adaptive cruise control. Mm-hmm. You know, especially if you get a Toyota, you know, they all have that as standard now. So, you know, something like a Corolla, you know, for, you know, $22,000-$23,000, you know, Honda Civic for, you know, $22,000. You've got all those features as standard equipment now. But even on something like the Kicks or the base Kona or the Venue, you know, you've still got, you know, at least some of those features on there as standard equipment, you know, at around that $20,000 price point, assuming you can actually find one.
That's the other challenge.
That's the rub. Yeah, I don't know. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I mean, if the GLK works for you, I mean, it's not so old that it's a death trap.
Yeah. I know, it's not like it's 1975.
It's a good car. You're just going to have to look over your shoulder when you back up. And you can get backup cameras, by the way. You can get aftermarket backup cameras. So that's a thing.
All right.
Save yourself a couple grand. Keep the car you like.
There you go.
Okay. Team Engineering asks, with other car manufacturers going electric and proving they can shift to a software-based over-the-air model, how long do you think Tesla will remain competitive? They've proven the iterative software model, but seem incapable of bringing out new models of vehicles.
I think Tesla's—they still got a few. I'm just going to say Tesla needs an adult to run that company. That's it. That's all there is to it. I mean, there's a lot of really smart, really talented, really nice people that work at Tesla. I have friends that work at Tesla, and I would like them to keep their jobs. And I like the idea of an American automaker who's sort of come out of nowhere and done really well. That said, I would like an adult to run it now. I think Elon is Elon. He's got a lot of money. He can go run Twitter, dig holes, go to space, do whatever. I think there's a point where the company needs to sort of start, like, okay, we need to stop thinking of, let's make announcements to get people excited about the stock and make announcements that we can actually and deliver on things that we can actually do. Because right now, the last, you know, every announcement right now for Tesla is just to sort of goose the stock to get more money. I mean, robots, really? A humanoid robot in a year? No, that's not going to happen. The Freightliner. You can get a Freightliner, East Cascadia.
just today.
There's there's so many things that Tesla is sort of, we're going to do this thing that Tesla shouldn't be doing. They don't need to do. They have, you know, four cars. They at some point they need to update the X and the S because those cells are just sort of, you know, cratering. I want Tesla to succeed. At the end of the day, the engineering team there, the people who work there, there's a lot of really smart, really nice, really, you know, good people that work there. And I would like that company not to go away because they are sort of trying to game the stock market as opposed to just building cars that people want going forward.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Tesla has still got, you know, some room for some growth, although, you know, their market share is probably going to continue to decline. You know, I mean, a year ago, they had 80% of the EV market in the U.S. Now that's, as of April, that's down to about 60%. But it's not because their sales are going down overall. It's because there's, you know, more people buying EVs and there's more options out there for people. So, you know, I mean, they're not going to maintain, you know, a majority position in the EV market over the long term because there's just going to be too much competition. But, you know, that as long as there's somebody, you know, running the show that, you know, is competent, like you said, you know, I don't see any reason why they can't stick around.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. I think things will change and I think they'll have to change and adapt what they're doing in terms of their model lineup and updating things and, you know, coming out with genuine new iterations of things. And that will happen. I don't know what rate because it's Tesla and who the heck knows with them, but I don't think they're going anywhere anytime soon. I still think they're going to be a solid manufacturer for a ways to go yet. I don't see them disappearing anytime soon.
60% market share is a lot.
That's still a lot.
They are still, as far as I'm concerned, they're still the Kleenex of EVs. When people think EV, you think Tesla.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah.
All right. Finally, Surtur asks, what will be the last car with a manual transmission?
Oh.
Mustang, the BRZ GR86, Z, Supra, Miata. I could see Porsche dropping the manual soon with increased electrification.
I'd go Miata.
Yeah, Miata. I mean, I'd like the BRZ and GR86 to last forever, but you can never tell at the whims of Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
Miata though, that's an icon. Miata's never going away.
To them to lose the manual transmission on a Miata, that would be the very last car I could see getting rid of a manual.
Someone at Mazda has one job, and that's to figure out how to put a manual transmission in an electric Miata. That is their job.
Some guy working away in his little office, slaving away all day, every day. We can't have an EV Miata until we can give it a manual. Make it happen.
as long as there is a Miata, certainly as long as there's a Miata with an internal combustion engine, even if it's hybridized, there will be a manual transmission Miata. But yeah, the others are all, you know, anybody's guess. Mustang is one, you know, again, if as long as there's an internal combustion Mustang, there will probably be a manual option there. But yeah, those two are, you know, those are the two most likely, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. The BRZ, the GR86, I mean, that's wonderful, wonderful car, but you can never tell whether or not. I mean, Toyota's killed the Supra before.
Right. Like the whole car could disappear. Yeah. Forget the manual car, transmission.
Yeah. And
car is gone.
The Z is the Z. You know, it's Nissan. It depends on how well Nissan's doing in a few years, to be honest.
And, you know, it's interesting, you know, from the presentations they did on the Z before the launch, it turns out 75% of all Z sales are in the U.S.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. So the U.S. is the primary market for the Z.
Wow.
And most of the rest is Japan. So, you know, since the U.S. is not, you know, overall particularly enamored of manual transmissions,
that doesn't bode well.
I think they would like to keep the manual Z, but like you said, you know, all depends on how long the Z itself holds up.
Stays. Yeah.
I mean, and that market, that segment is the sweet spot for manuals. That's where manuals are going to continue to thrive, I guess is the word.
Thrive.
Yeah. Thrive, because that's that enthusiast driver is, that's the people that, those are the folks who are keeping the manual transmission alive.
Mm-hmm.
But so if you're, you know, when an automaker comes out with a manual transmission, buy the car.
Just to keep manuals around.
I heard a story from an automaker about they went somewhere and they had just come out with a vehicle that had a manual transmission. Mm-hmm. And the person came in and saw them, and they were wearing like the jackets of that automaker. And they're like, "Oh, you work for that company?" And they're like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Oh, great. I'm so happy you came out with, you know, such and such car with a manual transmission." They're like, "Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah. So did you buy it?" "Well, you know, I have a commute and there's a lot of yada, yada, yada." They bought the automatic. He was like,
"Of course.
Come on.
Yeah. I mean, if you really want the manuals to stick around, you got to buy them.
You have to buy them. My brother-in-law has a manual transmission. He has two kids that both have driver's licenses. One has absolutely no interest whatsoever in learning to drive one. The daughter, who is 17, she's like, "I'm trying. I'm learning." So she can kind of drive it, but she might destroy it. But she's learning at least. But the older son was like, "I don't need to know how to drive that. That's a waste of my time and energy. I have other things to do." He wouldn't even learn.
Yeah, I had the same issue with mine. One wanted to learn, and the other one had, you know, We tried one time to teach her how to drive.
That was it.
Not happening.
One is your favorite one. You just don't talk to anymore.
Pretty much, yeah.
Right, well, it was a good run. We had a good run.
It was a good run, but you won't drive a manual, so done with you.
Yeah. All right. That's it for this week. Thank you, everybody, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.